I love the quote by Einstein where it's like, you cannot solve a problem from the same level of consciousness that created it. And so in order to expand your mind or open your mind or increase your level of consciousness, whatever it may be, you have to solve problems. Like, problems are the limits that are preventing you from achieving that. And most problems are mental.
Dan, welcome to the podcast.
What's up, man?
Dude.
We're on a mountain, dude.
How is that happening? How in the world did we go from episode 83, our Zoom backgrounds, to now on top of a mountain? So I guess a good place to start would be, what is the mountain you've climbed in your life?
The book, 100%. Like, I've had that question. It's actually a very interesting story where, or a lesson, really, where I was just writing the book, getting ready to publish it, doing a bunch of different promotions for it, learning all of these things that I've never learned before. And I was just so deep in it that I didn't really realize like the progress that I was making just because I was enjoying it so much. Mm. But then someone asked, like, is the book one of your biggest accomplishments? And then that actually made me zoom out and think like, oh, wow, like we're here after 3 years. And so that's one huge mountain because it's so much different and takes more of a commitment than just content or a newsletter or a YouTube video. It's like 50 of those in one and connecting them all together. It's interesting. So that's the mountain.
And when was the moment you first knew you wanted to write a book?
Since I was a kid. Or maybe not a kid, but that was something I always wanted to do, is become an author.
Mm.
It's just interesting. I would read people and it's like, it's the same with YouTube. We talked about this in one of the episodes where it's like, I just liked watching certain YouTubers or creators, and that's something that I wanted to do for so long that eventually I just became it. And it's, I read so many books and had so many authors impact my life that I had always aspired to be like them, maybe not by writing a book, just but on like an intellectual level. And so eventually that was just a byproduct where I realized that I could write a book, and then eventually it just happened. Like on a plane ride back from Costa Rica, I decided to write the introduction. I thought it was decent, but that kind of started the snowball.
I want to get into that process, but I want to take it to the end of the book, meaning like, what did you learn about yourself by virtue of finishing it?
Oh, man. You're good at these questions, dude. Always. I learned what my actual worldview was. And like expanded it along the way, because that's what I was writing the book about. And so connecting all of the dots and finding what those connections were just kind of it anchored each idea that composed my worldview and solidified it in the written word. So I can review it at any time. And just, it's like a YouTube video where you look back and you see that version of yourself, but now I'm looking at like the entirety of that version of myself, even though it's not written from like a first person perspective.
That makes sense. And it's fascinating when you have a piece of content that is so evergreen. Like that's, to me, is the crazy part about a book, is a book is everything that, it's like, it'll last longer. It'll be there forever. In the same way that a podcast won't necessarily. It doesn't feel like something you pass along to your children. A book does. Did you feel the weight of that while you were writing it?
Yeah. Well, it came in two parts where it's like I'm writing content all the time, but that's just a little snippet. And so when people comment, and whether it's positive or negative, it's like I explain the rest of it in the book. Or like that would always bug me, is I wish I had written a book, or I wish the book was out so that people understood the depth of this tweet, no matter how simple or complex it was. Like even if it was just a singular sentence that said some cliche quote or potentially cliche quote, there's like a mountain of depth behind it that I knew I had to explain further in the book. And so that was it. When going through and editing and writing, I scrapped the draft twice before I started the final draft, and like completely scrapped.
So you started from scratch?
Started all the ideas over again.
Wow.
I pulled some ideas over, but in terms of the actual draft, started rewriting it from scratch. And that was the reason why, is I'd read through it and I'm like, this can be better. This can be better. Like, this is going to hopefully live on. And sure, I can make edits in the future. But like, the foundation, the structure of the book has to be evergreen. And that's another thing, is with content. With content, you're kind of playing the game of catching attention and being with the times and giving away specific tactics. And so when writing the book, it's like, okay, peel back a layer. What am I actually saying here? What are the evergreen big ideas that will live on? Like, I have to make these timeless. And I say that explicitly multiple parts in the book, where it's like, I'm not going to give you tactics. I'm not going to give you the practical application of this, because one, finding those things out for myself was like one of the greatest things. It made me feel the best. It's just figuring things out along the way, but having the principles or the high level ideas that would shape those actions and help me make those decisions are what really matter.
Yeah. It's taking a deeper look at things and making sure that the things you're talking about are going to stay for a long enough time horizon. What was the one idea that surprised you that you wrote about in the book?
The symbol of the book, honestly.
So same as Rick Rubin.
Yeah. No,
almost. It's very similar. And I know you're not one to copy.
No, it was actually the exact same. And I hadn't heard of Rick Rubin until I posted it to my story, because I'm like, this is like, hey, this is the cover of the book that I made. And it was a circle with a dot in the middle. And then I got a bunch of replies and they're like, oh, this looks like Rick Rubin. And I'm like, what is this? Like, what do you mean? And then I go look at the book and I'm like, oh, it's the exact same symbol.
Wow.
When what I find fascinating about that is I read the book after. I read The Creative Act. And we came to the same conclusions on a lot of things, just worded differently. But it's interesting how we like made that same, I don't know if he made the symbol, because I know it's called like a circumpunct, which I believe it represents consciousness. So that was like the symbol that I put, and the reason I put the middle circle. So think of three concentric circles, just one outer, one in the middle, a dot in the middle. The outer is like, it has multiple meanings that I mapped out in the book after I wrote the book. And so the subtitle of the book is Find Meaning, Reinvent Yourself, and Create Your Ideal Future. And so from the outside layer, finding meaning, that outer circle represents the universe, or like life as a mental model, and the patterns that you can recognize in, let's say, a plant, like growth, death, division, unity, of like water to clouds to rain to whatever. So finding meaning and then reinventing yourself, that inner circle is the perspective of your ideal self. So the person that you are expanding into, with the universe as kind of like a guide or model or structure for that. And then the center dot is your current self. And so create your ideal future is you focusing your attention on the problems and goals that will allow your identity to expand from who you are to who you want to be to, and expanding that even further in alignment with reality.
Wow.
So that's like, that's the big idea that came like after the book, is like, what am I actually saying overall inside all of this? And then that, and I'm thankful that like people pointed out it was the same symbol as Rick Rubin, because then that made me go back again. I'm like, oh, there is a third line here, because there's something that, there's intention that bridges you and life. And that center circle is the future that you want to create. It's intention.
And what is the intention that you've been set for your life?
To see what I'm capable of.
To see what you're capable of. Wow. Okay. So that has expressed itself in so many different ways. You've seen what you're capable in fitness. I think that was probably the first one. You've seen what you're capable of in the mind. What were you capable of creatively?
Oh, man. More than I thought, that's for sure. Just in terms of sheer output of short form writing, long form writing, kind of pushing the boundaries. And I don't know, that was exactly it, is kind of sticking to the process of writing itself and eventually getting decent, or I'd say good at it,
mm-hmm.
to the point where, I don't know, even I look back and I'm like, how did I write that? Like, even some parts in the book, I don't think I could write the same exact book again.
What do you think happened there?
I would say circumstance, like situation, my perspective and how I perceive situations and my goals and problems at the time. So in the book, I talk a lot about constructing perspective or understanding perspective and how the openness or narrowness of your perspective determines how you perceive situations in your life, as whether or not they are opportunities or problems. And so constructing perspective, we think of perspective as that like outer circle or a frame for your attention or your focus or what actually catches your attention. So perspective is constructed of a goal and a problem, just simplifying it here because it can get very complex. But there's a problem on one axis or problem on one end, goal on the other. And by becoming aware of a problem or creating a goal, you can become aware of a problem. But if you become aware of a problem, then you can create a goal to overcome it. So from all of those, in my eyes, this is why people interpret situations differently. So you and I, we have different goals and different problems in our life. And when we read a book, we're going to highlight different paragraphs or sentences because of that. And because it's going to be either conducive to our goals or it's going to solve the problems in our life, potentially. And so that's why I think I wouldn't be able to do it again that way, simply because goals change, problems change, whether you want them to or not. And another big lesson there is this really creates the foundation of human behavior, where I see goals as either conscious or unconscious, so self-generated or kind of assigned to you by society, and fed to you as a child by parents, schools, teachers, whatever it may be. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but not questioning it could be a bad thing. And so by not questioning what goals you're pursuing, because in order to act in any given situation, literally everything you do, there's a goal involved with that. Even if it's like deep and already conditioned and unconscious, where even you taking a step forward when you're walking is technically a goal, right? So everything is goal-oriented. The lesson there is to create your own goals so that you are able to actually pick up and receive the information that will aid in those goals. So the further you zoom out to that of life or the universe and get the big picture so you can actually open yourself up to understanding what a bigger goal is, and then deconstructing that down from your ideal self to current self to create clarity as, like, we'll call that a plan, is just a series of goals to achieve what you want to achieve. That creates clarity, that creates perspective, that allows you to perceive situations as advantageous towards your end goal and make progress a lot quicker, and condition yourself with the information that you're putting into your mind so that you create is the key word there, a new identity, rather than an identity being assigned to you by the goals that were assigned to you. So that entire feedback loop of goal influencing perception, influencing what information you interpret or how you interpret information, and conditioning trains beliefs, ideas, interests, skills into your mind that creates your personality or identity. So coming back full circle, create your own goals, and that will create yourself.
Now, do you think that, this is fascinating because I think that you were assigned a goal before you even got here. And then it's like you're trying to...
Before you got here, like born?
Yes.
Okay.
That's my personal belief.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's true or not, but I believe that it's like we've all been given a gift. Every single person you see has a gift that they have, and some are expressing it and some are not. And what if you are getting back to the place of expressing that gift? And how do you get back to the place of expressing that gift? And so how do you take the conditioning that society is giving you, and how do you say, well, actually, I'm here for the gift that I've been given?
Yeah.
That's my question to you.
Okay. I like to think of this. This is going to be another... So take away the symbol that I just painted a picture of. But bring in a symbol or just concentric circles, layers of concentric circles. Let's think of the center as your core, and that you're being pulled inward. And each concentric circle is a purpose in your life or a goal in your life, with the deepest one being your life's purpose. And you don't know what that is yet. And it's a lot of people try to find their life's purpose, but it's difficult because there's those concentric circles going outward that are composed of lesser on the outside and greater purposes on the inside. From that conditioning, when you were a child, creates those circles. And we can also think of those circles as limits, like limits on being able to pursue those things, the lesser to greater goals. And now even further, we can think of breaking through each concentric circle as, because a purpose is a goal. So in order to achieve that goal, you need to solve the problem in your life right now. Like, which one is it? Where a lot of people have to solve the superficial and survival-based problems in order to get to the next level.
Yes.
Where,
go ahead. And I just want to say, like, you have a problem right now. Like, everyone has a problem right now that they know that if they solved would lead to something else.
And that's their purpose. Like, yes. I feel like that's what people are glancing over, is that main problem that a lot of people are suppressing in their life because they think it isn't worthy of their attention. That's their purpose.
Yes. It's like the insecurity that you don't want to look at. That's your purpose.
Yeah.
The person who you don't want to deal with, that's your purpose. Then the more you can embrace all situations, all things, all ways of being, the more you can be free.
Yeah. That's the only way to expand or increase your level of mind. Like, I love the quote by Einstein where it's like, you cannot solve a problem from the same level of consciousness that created it. And so in order to expand your mind or open your mind or increase your level of consciousness, whatever it may be, you have to solve problems. Like, problems are the limits that are preventing you from achieving that. And most problems are mental.
Especially for people listening to this podcast right now. It's like you're dealing with a mental problem. Okay, so.
Well, I think it has to be solved in the mind before it can be solved in the physical world.
Interesting. Like, you can't solve problems of the mind with the mind, is to quote Andrew Huberman. But the thing that goes against that is meditation. But so let's talk about meditation. Okay. What is your current perspective with meditation?
I enjoy it. I do a lot of walking meditation.
Yeah.
I do a lot.
As we spoke about on episode 216.
Yeah, the whole time. That was good. But no, I like breath meditation or mindfulness meditation, but doing it on a walk where I feel like I can breathe a lot better and pay attention to it a lot more. And it comes with the benefit of like burning calories on the way or just being out in the sun. So like I used to do it a lot, just first thing in the morning, going, sitting down for 15, 30, 45 minutes, however long it was. And just doing the breath meditation where you're paying attention to how it feels going into like your nasal cavity and down into your stomach, like back up your spine. And so I do that on the walk, is kind of like the circular breathing where I feel it go in, down into the belly. And then when I breathe out, it's kind of like you somewhat feel it go up the spine and around your crown, and it's just circular.
I think the reason why I asked you about meditation then and the reason why I ask you about meditation today is because when I say meditation, I just mean looking at your own suffering. And you don't have a lot of suffering, it appears. You look like and feel like a free person. You did then and you feel the same way now after meeting you. And I think when you see someone who's free, you ask them, okay, was it meditation? Which helped you become free? And you're like, not really. Like, you don't actually do the practice of meditation that often.
Right.
So if it's not meditation, what is the thing that has caused you to be the most free?
I think material progress is also a path to immaterial progress.
Where, say that again.
Yeah. Material progress is a path to immaterial progress because it's solving problems and it's exposing yourself to the unknown. It's exposing yourself and making you deal with your insecurities and your limiting beliefs, et cetera, in order to reach the next level. It's the actual vessel to do so, where I do feel like there is like an upward and a downward expansion of consciousness, where there's meditation, which is more downward, it's inward, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's outward or upward, which is like wisdom and understanding by collecting knowledge, concepts, and applying them and testing them in reality.
It's like building a business is meditation.
100%.
If you get triggered by a client who is telling you, listen, do this, and you're like, I don't want to do this and I don't like you, it's like, well, there's your problem.
Yeah.
Right? And so you exude the disposition of somebody who's done a lot of meditation. Mm. But that disposition is just you looking outerly at the world and being like, these are my problems. These are my triggers.
Yeah.
And yeah, do you have a thought on that?
Yeah. Well, because I feel like there's a lot of resistance to that idea, where a lot of people think material progress leads to like pursuing status, which I feel like that's a part of it. But I don't think that all actions come down to a singular reasoning. Like we can narrow our focus on the pursuit of status all day long, but there can be other drivers to actually go and act towards those things, like purpose or fulfillment or other things like that. And the one thing there is, we talk about becoming aware of and solving problems. And I would argue that if pursuing status brings pain and suffering into your life, that's a problem that you have to notice and solve. So it's not that material progress breeds the suffering that comes from pursuing status. It's that the individual usually doesn't become aware that that is a pain or problem in their life that has to be solved just like any other. And so I ask the entrepreneurs is like, if you have that entrepreneurial mindset, why are you not solving that problem? Mm. Like if entrepreneurs solve problems, why aren't you solving the problem of the suffering that comes from pursuing status?
Yes. And how have you gotten through to people like that? Is there anyone you can imagine or you've helped where you've expanded their consciousness to ask them to solve the problem of their own happiness or their own peace?
I feel like I've done that for a lot of people, like inadvertently.
Where
my business content is the most popular, but I like to weave in the philosophy or the mindset. And occasionally I'll throw in a full video where that's all it is. And so I've read a few comments where they're like, I came for the business advice. I stayed to become enlightened.
Wow.
And I was just like, that made me feel good because I like talking about the business stuff. I feel like I'm very good at that. And I need to lean into that more because I am good at that. But I also see it as an opportunity to push that attention to what I see as more important and to what fueled a lot of my business journey, which is the philosophy, the spirituality. Because in my eyes, it seems like there's a lot of armchair philosophers, just in general, like people that tell you to do something, but they haven't actually done it. Or, well, yeah. And so in that case, I see business as a vessel. Well, I see every area of life. I see fitness, business, relationships, etc., as a vessel to apply philosophy and become a true philosopher, which is, in my eyes, a practical philosopher. It's being able to zoom out to the perspective of the universe, come in and actually apply that and see results in this very moment.
It's like when you have that base of spirituality, it seems like everything that you do is infused with love. It's infused with a connection to all things, right? And people, they're drawn to it and they don't understand exactly why they're drawn to it. So take me through the progression of Dan Coe's spiritual evolution.
It's kind of a long way, man. So I really like the pre-trans fallacy, or let's say pre-trans fallacy, by Ken Wilber. I don't know if he actually coined that, but, and I don't know if it's called the pre-trans fallacy, but there, I know that there are three stages of spiritual development in this case, where pre-rational phase is kind of like Bible thumper. Anything this doctrine says goes. You're wrong if anything questions this. Like, this is law. And then rational is when you question that and you start to see the faults in it, and then you become atheist. And so I was an atheist, kind of, sort of, not really, like agnostic, whatever. I was just in this weird period for a good 3 to 4 years of my life. And then after that, you become more aware. You have to open your mind. Like, you can't get locked into that ideology. Even though people don't think atheism is an ideology, It very well can be, and it can lock you into that and keep your mind from expanding and seeing something further than that. And I'm not saying that I know any of this as a fact. I'm just saying, like, this is what makes sense to me and this is what feels true to me. So, depends. But the transrational phase after that is kind of like you transcend and integrate both, where you note the patterns and truths between most religions and what a lot of the spiritual teachers are saying. And you note that a lot of the time they're saying the exact same thing. And so it's like, okay, how can I subscribe to any one of these? But there's clearly some wisdom and value in these, and it's silly to just reject them and not integrate any of it. And then that's kind of how it's evolved from a very high level. But I also got locked in. I feel like there's another stage there where when we talked on our first podcast, I mentioned how the first thing that got me introduced to spirituality was The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. Great book still, but I feel like I interpreted it in a wrong way. And I kind of adopted that as ideology. And so anytime that I would hear, I would never say it to them explicitly, but anytime I would hear like a Christian or a Muslim or anyone, literally anyone, I would just be like, no, that's wrong. This is right in my head. Like I would get angry in my head, and that was completely against the point.
You were getting triggered.
Yes. Yeah. And so I would realize that, like, even after reading the book, I was living back at my parents during the summer because this was in college. And I would be reading the book and I'm like, I just learned something new, and I felt good about that. I felt like high and mighty about that. Mm. And so when my parents would walk in, and they were still religious, and so when they'd say something, I would kind of just like feel threatened, like my identity was threatened. And even so, in The Power of Now, there's a lot of like not seeing emotions as problems or not latching on to them or not letting silly things phase you. And so when I would hear my parents argue about something, I would get mad and I would let it bother me. And I'm like, why? And so thinking back, I'm like, okay, yeah, that was a silly thing that I did again, but I feel like it was a natural part of the progression. So it went from like being a Mormon to turning into an atheist to becoming ideological about spirituality and thinking that I was higher than everyone, because I talk about that a lot in my videos, but I feel like people don't know that I was that person. When I'm saying that some spiritual people act like they have a higher perspective than other people, I'm talking to myself there.
Yes.
And so
do you ever mention that, by the way? Do you ever like say like, I had this insecurity? Because I think that drives the point further home, that you're removed from that, and also that you can resonate with someone who is in that place.
No, I should have on the last video, because that was the main one that I'm thinking about right now in terms of that example. Because after I watched it through, I'm like, why did I not say, like, I'm saying this in a harsh manner, because I do that with some of my content. I'm saying this harshly because I'm talking to my past self.
Yeah.
I'm talking to that person. So let the record, this is the record of me saying.
Well, I think like what you can't talk about, your previous version of yourself, is where you're not free. Like still.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, like, and so one place you might not be free fully is I was an ideological spiritual person.
Yeah.
Right. And so
spirituality was my religion. Or like, yeah.
Yeah. And so what are other places you feel like you have room to grow or you are not free?
Business. Actually, yeah.
In what sense?
I've realized this because a lot of my best content is business content. A lot of it was the one person business concept, right? Because that's what I'd done. And I actually really thought, I think it's a great concept for helping beginners understand the principles of business, and especially modern business with like all of the technology, software, creator economy available to us. But when it came time to start, like I'm building the software now, I'm building Cortex, and we already have a team of 15 to 20 people. And so that's making me question, like, I had been saying that the one person business is like this almighty business model for so long that now I feel like me going into this, it's like, one, I'm enjoying this a lot. Like maybe I was wrong about having like all this free time to myself, doing everything myself, et cetera, et cetera. And that's it. It's like, I don't know. My mind continues to be open because I have the habit of just pushing further than I thought I originally could. And it's the same pattern in fitness where it would happen like cyclically. I'd get locked into these different diets or different training modalities until finally it's like you peel back and you're like, they're all saying the same thing. Like it's all there. Like I can create my own. So I think that's kind of necessary is having conceptual understanding and being able to test different techniques until you find the one or not find the one, but are able to pull from all of them and create one that is uniquely your own.
Yes. And life is just testing you. Life is saying to you, okay, you talk so much about one-person businesses, and now you like this other thing goes directly against the one-person business. Can you sit with this?
Yeah.
And your ability to do that is apparent because you're talking about it. And the very fact that you're talking about it says that you're not insecure about it.
Right.
Right?
What was the necessary next step? Like, as we've talked about, like the common theme of our discussions before this is just allowing yourself to change or being okay with change. And the thing there is, like, even though I'm not doing that right now, I do have experience with it and I can teach it extremely well for the person that it does fit for. Back to the principle in the book of perspective and being able to, like, this goes with content or business or marketing in general, is speaking to the people with a specific perspective that you can resonate with. And so me putting the one person business as a concept and phase of my life that changed my life for the good, like incredibly, I don't know. I can't speak enough on it, positive things. But me, it's kind of like passing that down to people now and being like, okay, now I know that this isn't the end all be all and I shouldn't speak about it that way. But I do know that it is a very valuable stepping stone for people that do want to take that path. For it, like, it has that specific demographic that it applies to, and it's very powerful for them.
How do you get people more comfortable with change?
Interesting.
How have you become more comfortable with change?
Yeah. By now, it's kind of habit. Like, by now, I just know that things are going to be okay. Like, I have the knowledge, I have the experience to know, okay, I'm going to throw myself into the deep end. And I know that I'll learn to swim because I've done it before, right? But a lot of people haven't. So, gradually tapering up. And I'm also a big fan of information in general. Like, information and building, or learning and building in unison, I feel like is the best way to learn. So, first is, in whatever you want to do, don't do it in public first, because that's what's holding a lot of people back is the opinions of others. And that's fine. Like, people think that's a bad thing, but again, you have to overcome it at some point. Like, it's a problem in your life, but you're not going to solve it in one swoop. It's okay to care what people think, because that's the only way you're going to get to the point of not caring what people think. So baby steps is build a project. And when I say project, that can apply to any area of life, of your life. It's your job to do whatever is relevant to your life. So in fitness, a project is you, it's your body, and documenting that project in the form of the weights you lift or the nutrition you eat, documenting, following the scientific process of trial and error, experimenting, finding new techniques to integrate and experiment with. Experimentation is huge. But that also goes for business, where you're going to, rather than trying to land customers first, you're going to, let's say, write a newsletter first. You're actually going to create something tangible in reality and learn in order to make that better over time. And by then, you're already doing the things that will condition you into a new identity, because you're absorbing new information, you're learning, you're changing your actions. And then when it comes time to put that new person out into the world to get whatever value you're trying to exchange for the value that you've been creating, then it slowly leads to that. It's not an all at, you don't just change all at once. Although you can. It can happen.
Has it happened for you all at once? Ever?
Yes. I feel like with the right why, behavior changes immediately. Where if you are exposed to that right why, like if I read a book like The Power of Now and I come across that right sentence, it's instant because I'm like, that makes so much sense. It's the perfect puzzle piece that just filled out the entire picture. And it happens all the time. It's happened a lot in fitness as well, where I listen to a lot of fitness content on YouTube and I'll be doing something a certain way for so long. And then someone presents me with the right reason to change. I'm changing. Or the right business opportunity presents itself, my actions and behavior change in alignment with that almost immediately. So this is a less guaranteed way or less stepping stone way to do it, to change. But it's always good to just adopt a daily self-education habit and exposing yourself and learning new things. So as long as you have 20, 30 plus minutes of learning new information outside of school, by your own curiosity, then you may come across the why that does change your life for the good in a specific domain of your life, according to the perspective that you have with the goals and problems in your life.
How does it feel to know that you've been the one to deliver that change?
It's insane. Because, yeah, and it's becoming so much more so now where I try, like, it's hard to... I don't know. Like, I'm extremely grateful for it, where I'm glad that I changed them or I'm glad that I helped with that change. But at the same time, it wasn't really me. And so I just have to continue doing what I'm doing, hope that my message reaches enough people and hope that people actually use the message. You know what I mean? Where I played a role, but it wasn't just me.
Of course.
It was them. It's everything they've done up until that point. Where I provided that last puzzle piece in many cases, and that's incredible. But at the same time, I've got to keep doing it. So it's like my focus comes back to the craft.
How does somebody get better at helping people make that for themselves? In other words, how does one become a better communicator to get to the point where one line can change someone's soul? Let's go. If you can hear that, the people are loving it.
Yeah, yeah. They're screaming.
This is expanding our consciousness right now.
Yeah.
Clap. Nice.
That's Simba.
Oh.
So cute.
Yep. So getting good at writing, in a sense, or writing a succinct sentence that does spark change.
Because that's what you do. Over and over and over again. Yeah. I mean, you could just hold up yourself to this baby over here and you could change this baby's life. Like, that's what your skill is.
It's because I'm good at understanding myself and writing to myself in many cases. And I mean, there's a lot that goes into this where I think of it as like accumulating and practicing skills for so long to the point where it just becomes automatic. And a lot of people don't see is that I've been on Twitter for, what is it, 4+ years now? And I've seen all of the data from my short writing, like the short impactful posts, to the point where I continue repeating those and just refining those ideas until they're just pure gold. And then when I sprinkle those, like that writing style has just become natural.
Yeah.
Like it's the only... I don't know. It's easier to write things in that manner, like in the newsletter, in the book, et cetera, just because I've done it for so long. Like that's kind of, it is, but it isn't a cop-out answer because I can't really give exact steps on how to do it. It's more so just stick to the process.
And why don't people stick to the process?
Oh, man. I usually think because they either... They aim too high without also aiming too low.
They aim too high without aiming while also aiming too low.
Without also aiming too low. So they aim too high. They have the vision. They have what they want to achieve, but they don't have clarity on how to achieve it. So let's think of it as like you're playing a video game. Mm. So you're level one and you're like, I want to get straight into the action. I want to fight a level 25. It's not going to happen. You're not going to have fun. Like, you don't have the skill to match the challenge of a level 25 player. And so if you were to take on a level two, then it's like, okay, I might actually be able to do this. And you feel the pull to do it. But you still have in the back of your mind the thing that's motivating you, which is the vision. It is the big goal that creates vision for your future. And that is somewhat irrational. Like, it's not super practical. Where the way that I think about this is when you set the goal to, let's say, get in the gym or change your body, a lot of people, or just it makes sense to set a small goal of just getting to the gym. But that's not super motivating. That's honestly kind of boring. And so you do need like the expanded mind and then expanding yourself into that. So the expanded mind comes from really visualizing the future of how you want your life to look related to the goal that you're trying to achieve. So get as crazy as you want. Do you want to be laying on the beach naked with a six pack tanned and have women flocking you? It's like, great. That motivates you. Hold that in the back of your mind. But then that's too far. Like, that's too far into the unknown. You need to kind of light a candle right in front of you and make that first step. And that is going to the gym and doing the actual work.
It's like, a lot of times I feel like what's missing is the medium term goal, the 90 day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you got the long term vision. You have the short term of going to the gym, but what's the medium term?
Yeah.
What is the 90 day? You know, that's why it's so helpful for me to start running the marathon. It's like, started that 3 months ago. And it's like, that's close enough into the future where I could see it, but it's not so far where I'm like, where am I going? Do you have a medium term goal right now?
It's easier when you're in business or like building Cortex right now. The medium-term goal is sustaining enough revenue to pay for development until V1 launches of the app. And so it's like medium-term goal, that's probably 2, 3, 4 months out, but it gives us time and like we know exactly what to do up until that point. And the big goal is obviously like turn into a unicorn company and sail off into the sunset. But along the way, it's like with the app, you have V1. V2, you're planning and visualizing V3. You're always thinking of features that you want to add. Like, it's the one thing on your mind that you're connecting and applying ideas to. And so it's a lot easier when you have an actual vessel because it structures things a lot more. Or in your case, it's like a competition or something where you're in public. So maybe a public goal is a great thing to do for the future. Where it's like a lot of people don't start because they're like, oh, I immediately have to go out and tell everyone that I'm doing this. And I don't know, that's in a lot of cases, that's what scares people away. And a lot of cases, it's a way for people to get the dopamine hit of achieving the goal without actually achieving it because they're not actually doing it. They're not getting the dopamine from doing it. And so it's better for them to stay quiet about the goals they want to achieve, but be loud about what they're actually doing because then people can still help them. Where that's a common objection to when people tell you to like build in silence or be quiet or, you know, whatever it is. They're like, well, you need people to help you along the way. And it's like, okay, what we're getting at here is do something and then tell people about it rather than telling people about what you're going to do. And then not doing it because you've already exhausted that motivation.
Hmm. What would you want everyone here to know? Like there's a crowd for those who are just watching and can't see. There's probably a crowd of like 100 people, I would say. It's about 100 people behind you. What would you want everyone here to know?
I don't know, man. I get asked that, not that question a lot, but you know, like, what would you tell your past self? What would you tell another person? Like, what's the one thing you want to give to other people? And if I could give something very meta to illustrate the point that I'm trying to say, it would just be like, do what you want to do.
Mm.
But that brings a lot of, it's, in my eyes, doing what you want to do is doing what your nature wants to do. It's that pull inward that we were talking about, or being called to achieve your highest version. And that's clouded by conditioning, limiting beliefs, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not what you think you want to do. It's peeling back behind that and following nature's compass through trial, error, curiosity, bouncing between the problems and goals until you reach the level you want to reach.
Because it's so fascinating, because doing what you want to do can lead you to drinking at the bar and just chilling with your life.
Even further, like I said, the concept of nature's compass right there, where it's do what you want to do, but don't suppress the problems in your life. Where if doing what you want does lead you to the bar, and you wake up the next day and it's not impacting your non-existent goals, then maybe it's time to set goals. Because the only way that problems can exist that are worth solving is by setting your own goals. So if you have your own goals, you choose to go out to the bar because that's what you want to do, great. Like, I don't see a problem with that. If you wake up the next day and it's really taking away from what you want to do, which is your goal, you're going to feel that. And the drinking is slowly going to fall off because you're not making progress towards the thing that you actually want to do. So do what you want, figure out what you don't want by doing that, because you have to make mistakes, right? Like, we've all drank in our life, but a lot of us have. You know what I'm saying? And then it impacts the goals, like the achievement of goals of some people, so they have to stop doing it, or they choose to stop doing it, and then maybe they go and make a mistake again. It's just, you have to make mistakes and figure out what those mistakes are. Like, if you just stay inside and, like, metaphorically inside your comfort zone or inside, then you aren't going to make the mistakes that lead to the lessons, that lead to the goals, that lead to solving better problems in your life, that increase your level of mind. If we want to go, we can go all the way back here, whereas it just from lesser to greater purpose, that's how you kind of do it, is by making mistakes, realizing what the purpose in your life is, solving the problem that stands in the way of achieving that, and slowly doing that over and over again until you've expanded your mind, because problems cannot be solved by the same level of mind that created them. And then life's good. To an extent. But you're still going to have problems.
Always.
But they're better problems.
Yes. And there's a real beauty to understanding that when you go to the bar, it's not about you going to the bar that's a bad thing. It's about your judgment of you going to the bar that's a bad thing that's causing you to not to be in the same place.
Right.
It's like, this has come up time and time again, where people are upset at themselves for doing an activity that if they just accepted that they did, they'd be better off.
Yeah.
Right?
100%. I used to get so mad at myself, like, when I went out and drank.
Yeah.
And then that would, I don't know, it just didn't feel right. And then I would suppress it. I would reject it.
Yes.
And that ties you to it.
Yes.
And then every time that opportunity or that situation comes up, then it just brings the pain back. Where I'll go out and, like, I feel like I've become very, how do I put it? Not loose, but, like, open to almost everything, because I know that relatively almost everything is not bad.
Yeah.
Like, going and having a few drinks, like, I don't do this often because I know it's going to take away from achieving my goals. But if I want to go and get blackout drunk, like, I'm pretty sure I can deal with that. I'm not going to, because it just doesn't make sense at this point in my life. Maybe it will. Like, maybe I'm on a week vacation with my girlfriend in the middle of nowhere, and it makes sense to just, like, have that experience. But right now, at this point in my life, it doesn't make sense. So, not sure if there's a lesson there, but I'm open to most things now.
I think openness is really one of the most important traits we could all develop, because from openness, you can have everything.
Yeah. And then you don't want it. Where it's like, I'm open to doing really anything. But most of the time, I'm not going to do it, simply because by that point, like, there's no pressure from myself to do it.
How can you help someone get more open?
Questioning. Questioning and learning from different perspectives in order to collect kernels of truth. So what I mean by that is studying different ideologies or material of one specific thing or one specific perspective. Like if you're locked in one perspective of, oh, drinking is bad, go and study a bunch of others. You can either like confirm that belief until the, like you can go down an insane rabbit hole just confirming your beliefs on like, oh, alcohol is bad. I actually did this in Austin. Is I went down a rabbit hole of confirming why alcohol is good for you. I bought books on like the history of alcohol and it being a good thing to have in your life.
Wow.
From like the Viking era. Like I forget exactly what the book was called.
Ernest Hemingway as well. It's like you could look at examples of amazing writers who have.
Yeah.
Or Alan Watts.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like find the people, the examples of the people who did the opposite of what you believe.
Yeah.
And be open to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not us telling you to like go and latch onto that. It's just like understanding all of the perspectives and not getting locked into one. Like this doesn't, we're making it sound like this is only for like bad things in life.
Yeah.
Where it's like drinking. This is for literally everything. It's for fitness as well. This is how you learn.
Yeah.
Learning is distinction. So when you make a distinction between different training programs, so let's say there's 2 days a week, there's push-pull legs, there's train every day, there's running, there's whatever. Like by getting locked into one, you limit your potential and you limit to actually create something new for yourself. Where if you study multiple and you notice, okay, these are the patterns of weight training, these are the patterns of nutrition, now I can take them and actually create my own method that I truly enjoy showing up for every single day.
And you've done that.
Oh, yeah.
And so let's end this podcast on the sunset, on the mountain, with a challenge.
Oh.
A challenge points to the place in your heart. You want someone to take this conversation and actually do something in their life with it. What's an action item someone could take from our conversation and lead a better life?
Solve the problem that's staring you in the face. Because there is one. And for a lot of people, that's the unlock. Like, don't solve the other problems or don't solve imaginary problems. Solve the one that's actually going to lead to making the most progress in your life and exposing you to the thing or the goal or problem that you have been waiting to pursue, right? If you want to start a business and you've been dreaming about that in your entire life, but you're not able to because of XYZ, then it's like, okay, take a different angle. Do you have to? Like, what's holding you back from doing that? Is it actually money? Is it education? Is it skill acquisition? Is it relationship problem? Like, problems in your life overlap. And you have to make the connection of, I want to do this. There's a series of problems that I need to solve. There's one that I can take action on right now that will unlock the level of mind to perceive the next one. And then I can slowly get to doing what I want to do or figuring out what that deeper or greater or life's purpose is.
Solve the problem. Dan Coe, thank you so much for doing the first ever mountain podcast that I've been aware. Thank you for, like, you're a legend. I'm so grateful for you.
Like,
and for your ability to communicate ideas and really push yourself to be someone who is thoughtful, interesting, insightful. And I'm really grateful to have known you and to have you on this podcast 3 times now. Thank you for being you, man. I really appreciate you.
I appreciate that, dude. Thank you for having me.